Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly, When Evil Lurks. The relatively new film written and directed by Damien Rugna. I'm going to talk through this today and also talk through some of the discourse that's happening around this movie online, which has become more and more fascinating to me day by day. If you haven't seen or heard of When Evil Lurks, it's a follow-up film from the director of the excellent movie Terrified from, I think, 2017. And the IMDb synopsis of When Evil Lurks is, in a remote village, two brothers find a demon-infected man just about to, quote, give birth, unquote, to evil itself. They decide to get rid of the body only to end up unintentionally spreading chaos. I kind of hate that that synopsis blames the two brothers and doesn't mention the character Ruiz, who is actually probably the first villain of the film. And When Evil Lurks is, I mean, I watched it on Shudder, although it looks like it's also available on AMC Plus. Not sure if it's in theaters anymore. And I'm going to super spoil this movie. So if you care about that, leave and come back, because there are so many interesting things happening here, and a lot of them hang on things that just have to be dealt with that are in spoiler territory. So let's walk through this movie, and also just keep in mind that from what I'm seeing in our community and then from reviewers and then talking to some people who have seen the movie, there's a lot of controversy about the rules in this movie and then kind of what the explanation for the character decisions are and then what the message or messages of the movie might be. And there are a lot of people snagging on one, both, or all three of those things. So I'll do a couple side channels as we walk through the movie to deal with those as we run across them. Okay, so the movie opens with these two brothers, Pedro and Jimmy, who are just, you know, hanging out at home, and then they hear a bunch of gunshots nearby in the woods. And it's nighttime at this point, and the first thing they do is go around the house, pick up a bunch of guns, and arm themselves. And then they try to reason out what these gunshots mean. And there's the interesting the kind of like detective work from the sound of the gunshots. Pedro, I think it's Pedro. He's like the more dominant of the two brothers. Jimmy's more kind of like go along, get along. And Pedro's like, that's not a poacher. That's not hunting. The pattern of the shots is weird. I can tell from the sound of the shots that it's a pistol, not a rifle. But interestingly, they don't rush out to find out what it is. They wait till morning, which is a wise decision, which is a hilarious way to start a movie where the main complaints I'm seeing from a lot of people who don't like it is that the characters make really stupid, rash, ill-informed decisions. But this is one of the only horror movies I've ever seen where people don't rush immediately to the action. They're like, yeah, there's like something happening across the woods. Let's sleep on it. Let's wait till daylight when we can see better. So they go out and they bring their dogs and they go to their neighbor Ruiz's property, or the dogs lead them there. And they find a body absolutely gruesomely sliced. It's in half at the waist with a bunch of mysterious documents and like these very interesting archaic tools that look like something like an architect or someone would use. One thing looks kind of like a sextant from a ship. One, you know, there's it's just a very strange assortment of tools. Now, I know this isn't chronological, but I want to immediately point this out because it fascinates me. So this is a possession movie. We're about to meet the Rotten, which is the man mentioned in the, his name is Uriel, We'll get to him, but he's the man mentioned in the IMDb synopsis as the one who's going to give birth to evil. And apparently that's what rottens do. They get infected, possessed, and then they try to give birth to evil and alternately try to like spread around it and possess other, you know, people or animals, like a spreading infection. And there are rules. There are 7 rules of how to deal with rottens, to take precautions so that the evil doesn't spread and that you survive the encounter. And the rules include: don't use firearms on them and stay away from animals. I might as well do all the rules now. So it's: don't shoot them, stay away from animals, don't take anything close to the rottens. So don't like take their clothes or their possessions and whatnot. Don't use electric lights. Don't hurt them. Never say their true evil name. And don't be afraid to die. Now, this is a really fascinating set of rules, and we're going to get into this in a minute. But I just want to point out at the jump here, the movie starts. What do? The two brothers hear a threat, and the immediate two things they do is they get their guns and they get their dogs. And considering the rules to deal with the possessed are don't use guns and stay away from animals, it's interesting that their problem-solving strategy is immediately coming up against these rules that they don't even really know yet. They're going to learn them later in the film, even if they vaguely know them, because, well, we'll get to that too. But the thing is, obviously, it's interesting that the things that you, in this area, this is in Argentina, I believe, the things you do to solve some kind of threat or problem are being taken away from you, right? Like if you went out at night, you couldn't use a flashlight. If you're driving a car, you can't use your headlights. You can't use electrical lights. You can't use guns. You can't use dogs. You got to rethink how you solve problems. And what's also really cool is their problem-solving strategy at the beginning of the movie actually works. I'm not sure they would have found the body without the dogs. The dogs track the scent. They go straight to the body. They lead the brothers to the body. They bring their guns, right? So, like, they feel safe and protected to roam around the area. It seems like business as usual to them, but in this movie, it is definitely not. So they go from this, they examine the body. They find these documents, and the documents name someone, Maria Elena Gomez, who's living with her family, her two sons, on Ruiz's property. So they go find her to ask her, were you expecting someone? This guy was carrying documents that had your name in them. He had a map that was leading to your house. And she says, yes, I put in for a cleaner because my eldest son, Uriel, has become a rotten. He's possessed. And the brothers go into the house and see that Uriel is in grotesquely bad shape, like hard to look at, kind of like the bloaters from Last of Us, but I think in this case worse, both like more human and just more disgusting. And they immediately know that something is severely wrong in this area. And they ask the mom, or Maria, when she put out a call for this cleaner. The cleaner is supposed to come and kill her son. Because there's certain ways that you kill the possessed in this universe. And if you do it the wrong way, if you shoot them, or if you even harm them, according to the rules, you can unleash the evil. Evil will begin to lurk. So how long was she sitting here with her son deteriorating? And she says, I asked for a cleaner, which is this universe's version of an exorcist, more than a year ago. So her and her poor other son have been caring for Uriel as he gets worse and worse, possessed by evil, for more than a year. And it turns out that the authorities that she reached out to, the mayor of the town, the police superintendent, I think they call him, it just blew her off, just totally ignored her for the longest time. I don't know how the cleaner finally got the word to come, But it's been way, way too long. And even Maria knows, you can see in her face, that this has gone on far too long. But she's been following the rules, apparently. Like, no electrical light usage. She's not harming her son. And in the brother's defense, they don't respond to the discovery of a possessed person right next to where they live with violence. They go straight to the authorities, who blow them off. And then they go and tell Ruiz, who owns the land and deserves to know. It's Ruiz who flips out and responds with violence. He goes over to the house where the possessed person and the family live, threatens them with a gun, and then browbeats the brothers into helping him move Uriel, the rotten, because his plan is to just drive him, I don't know, I forget what he says, like 300 kilometers away or whatever, and just dump him. Like into a ditch or a river or whatever, just as long as it's anyone else's problem but his own, which is clearly a terrible strategy. And there are so many people online talking about how a lot of the characters in this movie make decisions where they're being told something. Don't leave the room. Don't shoot the possessed person. Don't whatever. And the characters again and again ignore them. So I think it's interesting to highlight here that this is a part where Ruiz is telling them to do, the brothers to do something wrong, and they listen to him. Whereas in most of the rest of the movie, the people who are being told to do something do the opposite, or at best ignore what the person trying to persuade them is saying. So why is that? What is the pattern here? And it turns out to me the pattern is, whatever solution intuitively makes sense to the person involved, they're going to listen when people tell them something they already agree with, and they're going to ignore them when it's something that doesn't make sense to them. And I think that explains the difference between when people in this movie are listening and when they're not. It would be so great, right? Like if you have a possessed person on your land, to be able to just shoot him in the head and it's problem solved. Just bury him in the ground and it's over. Like the brothers were doing in the beginning of the movie when they were grabbing their guns and like mobilizing. Like if we have to go deal with a threat, let's deal with it as quickly and efficiently as possible. So near the end of the movie, when an expert, the Van Helsing of the movie, is telling Pedro not to leave the room, that it's a trick, that he's being deceived, and he leaves the room, he's leaving the room to get an axe because the axe is going to help him do quickly what he's trying to do to get the problem solved as quickly as he can in his mind. And of course it's a trap. Of course he listens. Of course it turns into a more spiraling disaster that will take longer and longer to solve. And spoiler, will become unsolvable. But it's because it made sense to him. I need to open up this space and get to this rotten, possessed body. I can't, if it'll take me forever to do it with my bare hands pulling at planks of wood, I'll go get an axe. And that's when I got a chill watching this movie and thinking about it, because this might be kind of easy to miss because possessed movies are spectacular and there's a lot of spectacular gore and disgusting things that happen and disturbing things that happen in this movie to people they don't usually happen to in horror movies, i.e. children, animals, pregnant women, etc. But everything about the evil in this movie is designed to be slow. It's designed to lurk. You to deal with the rotten, to try to lift them, like because there are two times in this movie, one correct and one incorrect strategy, where people try to lift the rotten. But the rotten has become enormous, huge, and weighs like a ton, it seems. So to try to transport or move this being will take forever. You'll move slow. It's like trying to move a grand piano into your 20th floor apartment using the stairs. It's gonna take forever if it's even doable. The evil that we meet at the beginning of this movie is being given birth to. it's a man, which is a reversal, obviously. So it's a man giving birth to evil. And what is birth? An incredibly slow process. There are all these rules you have to follow. You can't hurt them. You can't shoot them. You can't use electrical lights to find them in the dark. It seems like wind drag. If you've ever been on like a cruise ship at the front of the ship and you're trying to walk and the wind is blowing on you and it takes all your effort to move a step forward or to remain in place, there's all this drag on the prospect of dealing with the possessed, dealing with the evil spreading in your town, in your neighborhood. And everyone's trying to come up with the quickest solution, and evil is slow. It's a war between fast and stupid and slow and patient. And that's why when we meet Murta, the one effective character in the movie who's like, she's a cleaner herself or was married to a cleaner and obviously absorbed all the knowledge. I don't remember if she did it herself or just watched and helped her husband do it. But she has dealt with these possessed beings who an outbreak of them in the city she used to live in. So she knows. And if you watch her in the movie, you can tell that she's different. She's absorbing the information. She's telling the other characters who are running around not to rush, that we can't make a mistake here. She's taking in what people are telling her and what she's observing. And she's slowly calculating what the best response to the situation could be and what the actual lay of the land is, who's possessed, who's not, what's going on. And her pace is different than everybody else's. And that, I don't think, is an accident in this movie. And also, there's a haphazardness to the rules. And some people are complaining about that, too, that the rules don't make sense. I think that's purposeful. I mean, remember with the beginning of the pandemic when COVID hit and people were like telling people to wash their groceries, that you could get COVID from stairway or subway handles, that it wasn't in the air, then it was. You got to wear a mask, then you can't. This medicine works, then this doesn't. When evil breaks out, it's chaos. People don't just instantly know what to do. And sometimes the information you get is self-contradictory. And this movie does a great job of capturing that. And I kind of hate to see the discourse from the people who are disliking the movie, which is fine. I mean, there are all kinds of movies that the preponderance of horror fans love that either leave me cold or I actively dislike. But so disliking it is fine, but disliking it for the reason that the rules are chaotic feels to me like missing the point. And also, there is no one to turn to. There's no Catholic Church to do the exorcism here. The authorities aren't helpful. The characters literally say the churches are dead. So they're trying to figure this out on their own with the little pieces of information that they have that they're trying to share and communicate with each other. And I think it's also elegant that the tool that the cleaner was carrying, the tools that the cleaner was carrying in the beginning, that we see resurface because Murta, the Van Helsing of the movie, has a set of those tools herself, are incredibly complicated. And they're never explained in the movie because we never get to see them used because evil wins. But we get to see them start to be assembled, and it's a slow process. It's not like strolling into a vampire's lair with a hammer and a stake and just getting the job done. You got to assemble things. You got to hit the possessed being in a certain place on their body, the nape of their neck, apparently. And you have to get the tool put together just right. Again, everything in the fight against evil here is complicated and time-consuming. And I think that's glorious because that's life. This movie does such a realistic and good job of reflecting what it's like to deal with actual problems in life. If you've bought a house and then it's invaded by termites and they've eaten away things for years and you had no idea, you can't just like put epoxy in the holes and just fill it and be done. You can't solve it in a day. You have structural damage now. It's a process to deal with the threat. It's not like in most horror movies where the vampire is standing there, you just pull the curtains and the sun takes care of it for you instantly. And I think that's to this movie's credit. So back to the plot. Ruiz is told by the brothers that this possessed thing is there. He freaks out, takes a gun over, you know, gets them to move the body. They drive the rotten in a truck to get it as far away from their land as possible. A kid is in the middle of the road that they don't see. They swerve to miss him. They keep driving. And then when they get to the spot to finally dump the rotten out, they go to the back of their truck and open it up, and the body's gone. And it's weird. I watched it twice because their theory is when they drastically swerve to miss the kid in the road, that the body fell out or escaped at that point. But when you watch that scene, they look back in the rearview mirror and you see the kid and his bike on the road and you don't see anybody. And Uriel is hard to miss. So maybe it happened there, maybe it didn't. There are so many events in this movie that remind me of the episode Pine Barrens from The Sopranos, where the Russian character escapes, and by the end of the episode, you have no idea whether he lived or died, and the series never tells you again, as far as I know. His fate is completely left up in the air and unclear. And there are a lot of things that happen in this movie that are like that. And I know that could be frustrating for a certain kind of movie watcher, but I loved it. So Ruiz and their brothers just wash their hands of the whole thing. They drive home. They're like, he fell out somewhere, but at least it's far away from where we live. Problem solved. And that is when what I think the best two sequences in the movie happen. The first sequence is Ruiz wakes up to discover his wife actually tells him when she's outside that one of their goats has become possessed. So the rotten has escaped. He's been harmed. He's been moved, which isn't in the rules, but also is apparently not something you're supposed to do. Again, ambiguity. Like, are there more rules than the seven? How do we even deal with this evil when we can't even tell what the real rules are? So a goat is possessed. Ruiz takes a gun, shoots it. All the rest of the goats flee, except for the possessed one, which just approaches him in the most chilling Black Phillip way and sticks its head onto the barrel of his gun. And his wife grabs an axe and is screaming behind him not to shoot it because she apparently knows that rule. And I don't know why she brought the axe. Maybe she thinks, because it turns out a part of the cleaner's tools is a blade, that maybe a blade is just going to be better luck or better done. I mean, one of the rules is explicitly don't use firearms. But of course, Ruiz shoots the goat in the head, and then instantaneously, his wife kills him in the most brutal fashion with the axe, and then turns the axe blade facing herself and takes herself out, I think. And that scene is horrendously glorious horror moment. And the haunting thing to me here is her using the axe on herself and just running out of energy to swing it again. I think she gets 3.5 good swings at herself, maybe 4, I can't remember. But the last one is just the axe heading towards her face and then dropping to the ground and her falling over. Just absolutely chilling and unforgettable. The camera pans back and you've just got the dead wife, who was massively pregnant at the time. The Ruiz is dead on the ground as well. And the goat, just in a line of destruction. Now, this is interesting because the question to me is, when the goat died, did she strike so fast on her husband so that he couldn't get possessed and then hit herself as quick as she could so she couldn't get possessed? I've seen people interpret this different ways, that as soon as the goat died, because the possession moves really fast. We see it at other points of the movie. Did they instantly become possessed? And the thing is, I don't think so, because the rest of the possessed in the movie, as the demons moving from body to body, again, it moves kind of slow. It kind of taunts people and creeps lurks around and thinks of ways to feed on people's fears and cause them agony before they die. It just doesn't instantly take itself out like it does here. So if my interpretation of this scene is right, and she struck fast enough to make sure that her husband didn't get possessed and that she didn't get possessed and that they all died before the possession could really take hold, then it's fascinating that it just kind of, it doesn't end with them, right? It's not like The Exorcist when Father Karras is like, come into me, take me, and Pazuzu jumps into him and he just throws himself out the window and down the stairs. Like, if the rules of this movie apply to The Exorcist, that wouldn't do a damn bit of good. Karras would roll down the stairs, lay at the bottom of the stairs and die, and then the evil would be released into the air like spores. Just absolutely fascinating. And then what is probably the best segment in the movie happens, and it's when the brothers try to escape the town. They're just like, we're done with being in this possessed viral town. We're out of here. And they try to go collect, Pedro tries to collect his children who are with his ex-wife, and he has a restraining order against him. He acts completely insane. He goes into their house and takes off all his clothes because he thinks they're infected with the possessed, with the rotten, which turns out to be true in this sequence. So obviously, if you haven't seen your husband in years, you have a restraining order against him, and he comes to your house and takes off all his clothes and tells you that the town's being overrun by demons, you're not going to take to that information very well. So his wife, ex-wife Sabrina, and her new husband Leonardo, are very resistant to this. They call the police, and then the dog, who is sniffing Pedro's discarded clothes, is hanging out with their daughter, and that's when this just gets like as good as anything any horror movie did this year has been. The entire dog takes the daughter away. The daughter's rediscovered without any harm done to her somehow, even though she was dragged all around town. The mother, the prediction of the now possessed daughter, whispering to her mom how she's going to die, and the mom just disregarding the information because she's just so happy that her daughter has miraculously been returned unharmed. The, of course, idiotic choice by Leonardo to shoot the dog using firearms, even though I believe he was warned not to use firearms against something that was possessed, because everyone's just helping this possessed demons spread further and further in the town. It started with one rotten being, and now it's turned into John Carpenter's The Fog. It's just everywhere. And then the incredibly creepy dancing the little daughter does after her own mom is killed. All of this sequence, the music to it, the pacing of it, the editing of telling us that the dog has become a threat, but the people don't know it. Just all magnificent. So this is when what's left of the family actually gets to flee town. It's Jair, the autistic son of Pedro. It's Santino, his other son. It's his own mom. And it's their mom, Jimmy and the brother. They all get in Sabrina's car and leave town and go to stay with Murta, the Van Helsing, who explains more deeply the rules of the situation, gives a fascinating backstory to her and her husband and the people in the know, their war against an outbreak of possession in the big city where she used to live. And that's another thing that happens in this movie, is the people who are dealing with the possession we're dealing with in the movie can't believe it's happening because they think this only happens in big cities where there's a lot of people. They don't think it happens at where they live, which they call the edge of nowhere. And there's an almost It Follows-esque feel to what goes on here in the movie, because we feel like we're on Earth, but maybe Earth 2, like a different kind of Earth where possessed apocalyptic outbreaks happen and people are aware of them. They're like generally knowledgeable that these things happen. It doesn't feel quite like the universe we live in. But it's never outright stated that it's different. It's a very Twilight Zone-esque, like I said, like it, the ambiguity with It Follows about what time period it's set in, but never explained. It's got that off quality to it that I think is really cool. And it really does feel like evil is just rising and rising more and will eventually become triumphant. And it gives you the feel like the movie Fulci's The Beyond, or that ending of the Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds, Rebecca Ferguson movie Life. As a viewer, you just feel more and more alarm bells going off internally that humanity is outmatched by the evil that's being given birth to here. So Murta is a retired demon hunter. She's living in the middle of nowhere in a house that has no electricity whatsoever, just by herself. And they come and, of course, bring their problems to her. The dead wife, Sabrina, shows up, kidnaps the son, Santino, and runs off with him, jumps off a balcony, lands on the ground, and just leaves like Michael Myers off the porch style. Jair gets possessed, but only Murta really knows that's happening. And she even has this theory that it's harder for a demon to possess an autistic child because it gets lost in their brain somehow, and it's harder for the demon to figure out how to manipulate the possessed person in that case. So she knows that he's a ticking time bomb, but isn't activated yet. Jimmy and Murta and Pedro go running around trying to find the Santino, who's been kidnapped by the mom and vanished. They're driving through the darkness with this incredible detail of just like briefly flicking on their headlights and then turning them off because they're trying not to use electric lights, as the rule says, which is what a pain in the ass when you're hunting someone at night to be able to only use your headlights like very intermittently. And then I believe it's Jimmy in one car. It's Murta and Pedro in another car. He breaks off and he discovers Sabrina with the now dead Santino, and she's carrying her child's body in her arms, and she's, I don't even know how to describe what she's doing to the body. She's like treating him like string cheese. It's awful. It's an awful sound that's happening with it. Awful visual, great acting from the actor who's playing Jimmy, who's just like almost paralyzed with disgust and fear. And meanwhile, in the other car, you have Murta driving with Pedro, and a very interesting exchange happens there where Pedro is like, you know, he literally comes up with this theory, or no, I think Murta comes up with it, but whatever, it doesn't matter. They're like trying to figure out why did the Rotten come to this middle of nowhere town in the first place. And then Murta starts to fear that it's coming back for her, that maybe she brought all this on all of them by her presence, that the demons had unfinished business from her and her husband being able to defeat them so often in the city. And Pedro turns to her after she says this out loud and is like, well, then why did it come for me and not you? Why did it take my son? And she says, because you're afraid. Rule number 7 is don't be afraid to die. And it's really don't be afraid of anything, because the demons use your fears against them. And she says to him, if you're afraid of heights, it'll put you, make you feel like you're up high. If you're afraid of fire, it'll manifest fire. Like, it's using your fears. And she is absolutely not afraid. And I love her character. Total badass. Pretty unimpressed with the outbreak until it finally claims her, unfortunately. But just a great, great character. But she also, as they track the possessed to a schoolhouse, I can't tell if it was abandoned or just closed at the time, but, she says, she thinks the possessed Rotten or Uriel has relocated here. She says, because evil loves children and children love evil. Now, there aren't a lot of horror movies brave enough to set up on that premise, right? Like, that's supposed to be sort of off base. It's every time Jason walks past child, like in I think Jason Lives, or when Michael Myers in the reboot trilogy is walking through the house and comes across the crib, they just move on by. Like, this is not supposed to be happening. This movie has zero fucks to give about that setup. As a matter of fact, it encourages it. And it turns out that the kids are helping the Rotten. I'm not sure if the kids are possessed or not, or being manipulated, or they're just like in, like the Rotten is forming a cult with them. Very hard to tell in this movie. They're being aided by the evil force somehow, but it's very hard to track. But they have killed all the teachers and parents, all the adults in this area, and buried them in underneath the school in this hideaway cubbyhole, along Uriel is also just dumped there and just sitting in this place, radiating evil further and further out through the town. And just the fact that we're all of a sudden in like a Village of the Damned situation here near the end of the movie is really startling and very creepy. There's a scene where the kids are celebrating the triumph of evil, and one of them has this rictus grin on her face, and I still can't get it out of my mind's eye. I'm still seeing it while I'm talking to you, and I don't particularly want to be. So the kids try to trick Murta and Pedro away from this location and tell them that the Rotten is hiding over here in someone's house. No, it's hiding over here in another house. Pedro gets frustrated like he always does because he's not learning anything in this damn movie, and tells them to stop lying to him. And Murta's just looking around, taking all this in, which is her style. And then she says, no, if they're trying to tell us that this thing is elsewhere, it's right here. Accurately assesses the situation, goes into where the Rotten is. Pedro starts trying to dig him out but can't lift him. He's in a heap of corpses of all the parents, which are covered in lime to prevent the smell. I mean, all of this is so devious and sinister in its setup. And meanwhile, Murta is trying to construct this possessed rotten killing tool while she's yelling at Pedro that they're running out of time to deal with this, that he's got to just pull this rotten thing up as hard as he can. She's like, do it for your son. And he can't get enough grip on this enormous body, this Jabba the Hutt possessed being, to pull it up where it can be struck by Murta. He's like, I have to take apart all the planks of wood that are blocking. He won't fit through this. And she's like, do it then. And he's like, pulling at it with his hands. And then one of the girls, one of the little girls who are just standing around like Mike at the end of the Blair Witch Project, creepy style, just there lurking again, pipes up and says, there's an axe in the principal's office. All you got to do is go around the corner and get it. And Murta is screaming at Pedro not to listen to her, that it's a trap, that it's a trick. And what does Pedro do? Of course, he leaves the room, ignores the expert, goes and tries to get the axe, which is not there. They lock him out, and then the kids deal with Murta and kill her brutally. And now our chance to stop the evil, the birth of the evil, is finally over, and we know it. We know that this is the end of the mist. This is not going to go well. Pedro bashes Uriel's head in because he's learned absolutely zero things throughout this course of the movie. And then Uriel splits open and evil is born in a bloody, blood-soaked child like Damien style who emerges from the pile of bodies. Just awful. Just awful imagery, but also incredibly beautiful in a weird way when the kids and the new cult and the new evil that's been born just strides out into the world under a sunset, just out into the field in a gorgeous, gorgeous shot, but just absolutely haunting because we know that everything is doomed. Everything in the radius of this area, at least, is doomed. Pedro and Jimmy go back home, which is what they all did when they dumped the Rotten in the first place and just thought the whole problem was solved. They do it again. Now, all they've got left is their mom, who they left at home. They didn't take her on this adventure. And Jair, who's been with their mom, and each other, right? So they've lost most of their family. They lost their the protector, Murta. And it's just awful. But as you would expect with this movie, it gets even worse, because when they get back, something is revealed, which is there was an earlier scene where Jair, who hasn't been able to say anything or really speak for himself through the whole movie, just he's out in a car because they won't let him in the house. He strolls in and starts saying to Pedro and Jimmy's mom, his grandmother, I believe, I'm hungry. I want some food. I don't want to be out there because it's cold. I'm afraid I'm going to get sick. All of a sudden, he's speaking perfectly. He might as well just be giving the Gettysburg Address. And the mom is completely chilled. And then when they come, when Jimmy and Pedro return, the mom is nowhere to be found. But they're trying to help Jair because he's theoretically kind of helpless. They get him the apple ice cream they've been promising him the whole movie. And he starts eating it, but he starts choking. And it's hard to choke on ice cream, so the father's confused. He starts pulling Jair's mouth open and discovers that he's choking on human hair. And he pulls more and more clumps of hair and then flesh. And he's pulling it out, and it's falling into the discarded ice cream on the ground, making the world's grossest mix of things you could possibly imagine. And then the mom's necklace comes pouring out of Jair's mouth. So now we know that he has eaten his grandmother. And the, I think possibly the creepiest visual in the entire movie is this very quick, very subtle sidelong glance that Jair gives his father. And then before he puts his eyes back into like vacant state, like a flash, like the demon can only control him like strobe, like intermittently, maybe, but just took a quick look at him to see the effect of all this horror on him. And the brother, Uriel's brother, who's been hiding out, you know, he came into the beginning of the movie and we haven't seen him since. He tells Jimmy that he also ate his mom. And Jimmy's like, he says, I ate my mom. And Jimmy's like, and he's like, say the same thing that happened to your mom. And now Jimmy knows. So then Pedro just walks out in a daze, in a horrified, defeated, stunned daze. Jimmy runs into him in the front yard of this house, and Pedro just falls to his knees and screams. And that's the end of the movie. And it's interesting to me that it ends on a non-violent note. Now, I didn't exactly expect Pedro to retaliate for the eating of his mom by the possessed son Jair against his own son. But it's the first time in the movie where the possessed have done something horrendous and the human who discovers it doesn't immediately grab a gun or an axe or a knife or try to do something violent or like whatever. He just walks away and sits down on the ground broken. And and Jimmy goes into the house, and the movie ends again. To me, it's kind of ambiguously, because the note that this movie is leaving the viewer on is that evil is completely triumphant. The evil that was born out of Uriel's disgusting body is now striding the world with a bunch of disciples. Jair is in the house possessed. And the question is, now what? Well, evil has been unleashed, so everyone's in trouble. It's a very, like, end of the world. This movie would comfortably fit into John Carpenter's Apocalypse trilogy, which I really like, because I recently covered Prince of Darkness and In the Mouth of Madness on a podcast episode a little while ago. But you've got Jair sitting in there possessed. Are they going to start to care for him the way that Maria and her son cared for Uriel, where they don't do something rash? They don't just flee and leave him there to by himself. Like, is there going to be some kindness here? Can you bring yourself to be kind to a child who did something so ghastly? Or are they just going to like do a murder, you know, everyone packed and just all take themselves out in a, like in a blaze of disglory? Because it's very hard to tell what is going to happen next. It's something that wouldn't immediately leap to your mind when the movie ends, because you walk away from this movie, if you liked it, if you were affected by it, you walk away from it kind of just stunned. Like, it's completely bleak, completely dark, pulled no punches, gave no hope. So you walk away and the message you're kind of getting is just total defeat. So when someone's just broken and defeated, you don't extrapolate necessarily what they're going to do next. But if you give a little thought to what might be happening next year, it becomes pretty interesting. So I love when evil lurks. I can see how some people can't connect to it. And I respect it. I had a similar feeling the first time I watched Midsommar. It was just so hard for me to grasp that these people were in such a clearly awful situation and made no attempt to flee. It was such low stakes being there. Like, they were just vacationing and doing like thesis papers. It wasn't like a life or death situation. They had to stick out, but they just never seemed to respond to the danger until too late. It felt like plot holes were around in that movie. And it just, I came to accept some of it. Some of it still bothers me. And I could absolutely see how someone would feel that exact same way about this movie. I just don't. With this one, I love that the rules are jagged and a mess. I love that the information is incomplete. It feels like what happens when a real dire crisis actually breaks out. I really liked the characters. The visuals were phenomenal. The movie was ruthless in its victim set. So it was just like had no boundaries or barriers of who was going to get hurt or when or how, which I don't think would work if every horror movie did it or work all the time, because it would just come across as sadistic, but really made sense in this universe. I love that when even people know the rules, that they can't follow them. And sometimes it we're right there with them. There's a scene that I didn't mention where when Jimmy comes across Sabrina string cheesing her son, he gets so emotional, he just rams her with a car, putting his own life at risk. Like he runs into her and then runs her and the car into a tree, smashing her against the tree. And even though I knew the rules were not to harm the possessed, it wasn't till the second time I watched the movie that I even bumped on that. The first time I was like, if I saw someone doing that to my nephew, I would have the exact same response. Like, I was right there with him the first time. It was like I knew the rules and then forgot the rules, which is the exact same position the characters are in often in this movie. I love that the movie tells us things that point to a bigger picture and then doesn't explain them. I'm so tired of huge exposition dumps. Oh my God, The Nun 2. I felt like half of that movie was them just assuming the audience was too stupid to put anything together and just having characters just speak everything about what was happening. And this movie is the opposite of that. It maybe errs on telling us not enough, but it's so refreshing compared to what most horror movies are doing lately that I loved it. There's a moment when Evil Lurks, when they later in the movie, towards the end, Murta looks and sees that the entire bigger part of the town is black. And she turns to Pedro and says, they've killed all the lights. They've initiated the protocol. Like, they have a possessed apocalypse protocol. Like, the town has a drill for this. I want to do this in my town. I want to drill for like possession outbreaks. But like, why is this so known? Does this just happen all the time everywhere? We don't know, because we're stuck in this one little part of this world. And the movie doesn't bother to explain, except in very small hints, the bigger picture, which would drive me crazy sometimes, but I think is fantastic here. But in the end, I love the box that this movie puts its characters in. It's like being in a vampire movie where they tell you, here's the thing you can't do with vampires. You can't hit them with stakes. You can't use crosses. You definitely can't use garlic. Go get them. And you're like, what? What the hell can I do? And your only option is to hope the cleaners come, and the cleaners can be killed on the way in. Clearly, that's the first thing that happens in the movie. So they're just as vulnerable as us to interference from the demonic forces. And they're not integrated with any kind of authority system that makes sense or even takes it seriously. So it's just like everyone, every block of people or strata of society in this universe is just like out for themselves and doesn't care what happens to any other block of people. And that miasma, that atmosphere of everyone is doomed and no one has quite enough power or intelligence to put it all together to strike back, just settles over everything like a really cold, dense, weigh you down fog that gets heavier and chillier until the movie just like has its way with your mood and your attitude. And that's pretty special. If you're the kind of horror fan this movie can connect with, it's going to be one of the best and most memorable movies of the year for you. Now, we reviewed this movie together as a community. I put a post up on the Horror Weekly page and asked for thoughts and opinions on When Evil Lurks. And of course, like you always do, you all came through with some amazingly thoughtful, interesting takes. So the 30,000 foot view is it was about an 80-20 split. There were 20% who either found the movie meh or actively disliked it. 80% really liked or loved it. It feels like one of those love it or hate it movies. There weren't a lot of meh, and there weren't a lot of I liked it, but it was okay. There were few, but it was mostly loved it, you know, one of the best of the year, just as good as Talk to Me, or, you know, like people naming their other favorite movies of the year, or just absolutely hated it, don't get the hype kind of comments. But as always with our community, it was more thoughtful than you see online most of the time, with better, richer explanations of why people felt that way. I'll give you some examples here. Red Scream Film Studio. I like when pages comment, and it's not just individuals. That's interesting. It's happening more and more. Their comment says, 11 out of 10, best horror film of 2023. Interesting to note that many of the reasons people hate it are the same reasons other people love it. For example, the actions of the lead character and the vagueness of the rules, like we covered in the podcast episode. Lee Morgan said, brilliant first 30 to 40 minutes, really bloody good and very well done. Just a shame they couldn't keep that momentum going throughout. Kind of felt like they'd emptied their clip and run out of ammo too soon. John Chadwick, who is in our subscriber group, thank you so much for supporting, said, a refreshing take on possession. I actually like that there's a history to the lore of the movie that it doesn't feel the need to fill you in on, like those steampunky devices that the Exorcist carry. And then there's that scene, masterfully done. I was trying to explain to my wife how it reminded me of those chaotic family scenes in early Spielberg movies. They telegraph that something is going to happen in that scene, and even who what will be the source of it. But there's so much else going on that when it does happen, it's still a gut punch. I got such a rush of adrenaline when it happened. Great comment, John. Kaylee Orbaugh said, gruesome scenes, beautifully shot. My jaw was open for a few of the heavy hitting moments, and I was glued to the screen from start to finish. This one left me with all the creepy feels for quite a while after it ended. Brilliant. Clay Staley said, really amazing world building without ever feeling exposition heavy. Kind of reminded me of Prince of Darkness in that it made biblical evil actually terrifying in a way that's pretty rare for me since I'm not religious. I love how the cleaners are their own sort of occult group and how their stuff works is so mysterious. Jordan Back said, I think they're correct in saying that when the downfall of mankind happens, it'll be because of people who can't follow simple instructions. Helen Hudson said, it wasn't without its flaws, but I really liked it. I would have enjoyed a bit more depth on the rules and lore. Why no lights? Why no guns? But it was unflinching and had a nihilistic ending Richard Bachman would have approved of. Sarah Winters, who is also a subscriber, thank you for the support, Sarah, said, I watched it last weekend and thought it was a great ride, and some of the scenes will likely stick with me for a long time, but now reading some of the comments, I just realized I cannot tell you how it ended. I need to rewatch the ending. And last one here, Jeremy Harbert said, I thought it was a great film. The world building hinted at some interesting lore. The imagery of the violence was really well thought out and executed. The lady eating like she was carrying a bag of chips stuck out the most for me. I liked the main characters too. The brothers had a lot of concern for each other and their family, but the elders' faults held them back. I like how that was built on through the film, so the ending made sense to me. All right, so that is Damien Rugna's When Evil Lurks. Thank you so much to everyone who commented and supported the post. Thank you especially to everyone who subscribes in our Facebook supporter group. We can't do it without you. And to everyone who gave reviews, there isn't a written review for me to report this week, alas, but I did see the ratings continued coming in strong, both on the Apple platform and on Spotify. Can't tell you how much I appreciate that and how much it helps to grow this thing so we can get more comments. Like, I know the Facebook page is pretty large, but there is a different kind of commenter I'm noticing that are coming in from discovering the podcast. They're coming in from like from a different perspective. So if the podcast is getting ratings, that means Spotify and Apple will give it to more people, which will bring more people into conversation with us. We're all doing this together. So if you haven't given a written out review or at least a rating and you find the time to, thank you so much. When ratings lurk is my favorite thing. So that's it for this week. Until next Wednesday, have a great horror week.